بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. الحمد لله رب العالمین و صلی الله علی سیدنا محمد و آله الطاهرین لا سیما بقیت الله فی الارضین. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is the session 14th related to lesson 11 of the book Philosophical Instructions. The title of the book is of this lesson is Introduction to Epistemology. In the next 10 lessons, we will focus on issues related to epistemology or theory of knowledge. First of all, we should know what is the significance of epistemology or theory of knowledge, or in Arabic, ilm al-ma'rifah. As you remember, we said that there are many questions, many fundamental and profound questions that occupy our minds. You cannot find any human being who takes his life seriously unless he or she has these questions in mind. And this is not exclusive to our age. From the very beginning, there have always been these questions coming to the minds of human beings, and there have always been efforts to find proper answers for these questions. For example, the questions about our origin, about our future, about our present situation, what is the reality of the world in which we live, and about our own identity, about our own reality, whether we are material or spiritual. These are very important questions, and to be able to have a genuinely human life, we need to have answers for these questions. And this is why we need to get familiar with philosophy. You may not necessarily be a philosopher, but at least every intelligent human being needs to know something about philosophy, either in an academic way or sometimes not in an academic or systematic way. But anyway, any effort for finding answers for these questions is, in a sense, related to philosophy. Okay. Now, when we want to philosophize, when we want to find answers for these deep questions, when we want to know the world around us, the very important questions that at the very beginning encounters us is whether we are at all able to know the realities around us, or in other words, is there any possibility for knowledge? Can we know something? Because if you suppose that we are not able to know anything, if we are not able to know ourselves or the world around us, so what would be the point in trying to philosophize? This is why it's very important, before entering any ontological discussions, any discussion about being qua being, to first settle important questions in epistemology about the possibility of knowledge and about different ways to come to knowledge. How can we argue for the truth of our knowledge? So, as you see, logically, we need first to discuss epistemology or theory of knowledge, and then we can enter into the main body of philosophy. Regarding epistemology, there have been people in the West, especially in the modern age, who have had serious doubt about the possibility of knowledge in general, or about, for example, rational knowledge. And these people have caused a hesitation, a serious doubt among many Western thinkers about the possibility of arguing rationally for the truth of something. And we gradually will get familiar with these ideas. So, I think there remains no doubt about the significance of epistemology. And anyone who wants to study philosophy must first of all settle this question in his mind, whether he is able to know something or not. If the answer is positive, if we say that we can know something as reality, we can know the world around us, then we can start our efforts to actually philosophize and enter into the philosophical studies. After this, the author continues the discussion with a glance at the history of epistemology. Epistemology as a discipline, as an independent field of study, is not very old, like many other sciences. But epistemology as a group of questions, a group of problems that have always been occupying human minds is very old, goes back to the early history of philosophy. Maybe you cannot find any age in which there were no philosophical questions and certainly epistemological questions. Maybe the first reason that led to the attention of human beings towards epistemology was their awareness of the errors in our perceptual or sensual knowledge. I mean the knowledge that we receive by our perceptions, like by, for example, seeing or listening. These perceptual ideas on many occasions prove to be mistaken, prove to be wrong, false. I'm not saying in the majority, I'm saying in many cases. So human beings started to doubt about the possibility of knowing something because they thought, or at least some of them thought, that if in many cases we have found that we have been mistaken in our perceptual knowledge, so what is the guarantee for securing a proper and sound knowledge about the rest? Maybe in other cases we are doing the same mistakes without our own awareness, and maybe it's just a matter of time, and in future we will realize that we have been mistaken in those cases as well. So as soon as we find considerable amount of mistakes in some areas, then this doubt spreads out and affects other areas of our inquiries. So this question was very serious, and some people, the Eleatics, tried to argue for the soundness, validity of rational or intellectual knowledge. So they said, these mistakes that you mentioned, which happen in our vision, in our seeing, sightseeing, or for example in feeling the warmth or coldness, these mistakes are all related to our perceptual knowledge, and our rational or intellectual knowledge is safe and sound. And there have been many people who have had doubts about the perceptual knowledge, but they have had no doubt about the rational knowledge. Unlike what happened in the modern time, that there have been many people who have had doubt about the soundness and validity of the rational knowledge, unlike the perceptual knowledge. Anyway, so at the beginning, we can refer to the Eleatics as key figures in this regard about epistemology, because they were defending the possibility of having rational knowledge in a sound and proper way. After them, Sufists were again concerned with the issue of possibility of having sound knowledge. And because they were very much preoccupied by differences in ideas and the fact that everyone argues for the soundness of his own position, and sometimes if a lawyer is capable, can defeat his counterpart, even if his own ideas, his own positions were not true. So this led them to deny the truth and to deny the possibility of discovering the truth. So they caused real skepticism, a very great amount of skepticism in the ancient Greece. After them, one of major figures, of course we cannot mention all the history of philosophy in the West, but just turning points. After Sufis, a very important turning point is the time of Aristotle. And you know that Aristotle was the first, as far as we know, the first to articulate logic and present a system of logical thinking. Of course, before Aristotle, there were many people who were talking about different rules of deduction, or, for example, syllogism, and so on and so forth. So Aristotle was not creator or inventor of logic. Indeed, logic is the way that our mind works. But Aristotle was the first to articulate, to systematize logic. And the whole benefit of logic is to help us to guarantee the truth of our understanding, either in relation to our concepts, how to come to a new concept from the concepts which are already known, and secondly, in relation to the propositions, how to draw a new proposition out of the propositions that we already know, the premises that we already know. So this was also a very important turning point. But the first systematic approach towards epistemology may be traced back to two figures in the modern age: Leibniz in Germany and John Locke in Britain. These two were among the earliest modern philosophers who attended to epistemology. And John Locke's ideas were followed by Berkeley and by David Hume, two other British philosophers. And these three, John Locke, Berkeley, and Hume, were all empiricists, and they were giving priority to the empirical knowledge. And we will talk about them in more details future. So you see that how there have always been people who have been attending towards epistemology, but at the same time, epistemology as an independent discipline, we can say, is not that much old. It at most goes back to the time of people like Leibniz and John Locke, and this is something like, for example, 17th century. The issue of epistemology was also followed up by other philosophers. The same trend of empiricism was also followed by positivists and then by new positivists or logical positivists. Of course, each in its own way. And there were also people who were not categorized, classified under the title empiricist, but they were very much affected by the ideas of the empiricist. Like, for example, Kant. Kant is considered as a rational philosopher, but he was very much influenced by the doubts raised by David Hume, and he could not escape ultimately from those doubts. So Kant tried to evaluate and assess and criticize the power and the scope of our intellect, our reason, and our rational knowledge. But in the end of the day, the only conclusion that he could get was to say that by our theoretical reason, we cannot have any sound philosophy, any sound metaphysics. Of course, the same is true about theology. So our theoretical reason is only useful in issues such as mathematical issues, or for example about the experimental sciences. And for metaphysics or theology or morality, we need to use the practical reason. So you see, as Kant himself said, Hume awakened me from the dogmatism. This is the way that Kant himself talks about his own experiences. But when we look at the ideas that Kant presented, we may not call it that he was awakened by Hume, but at least we could say he was really influenced by the ideas of Hume. And we think that the ideas of Hume were not correct, so we cannot say that Kant was awakened, but anyway, he was influenced by the ideas of Hume, and he could not escape totally from the empiricism of Hume. What about Islamic philosophy? In the Islamic world, philosophy have almost been always following the same path. You do not see these large disagreements, these deviations among Muslim philosophers. There have been different schools of Islamic philosophy. There have been people with different ideas, but sharing a lot in their philosophical ideas, as if it's only one line, one trend, which is always going forward. The most important resistance against philosophy, the author says, was made by two groups of people. Firstly, by a group of people who were thinking that the philosophical ideas of their time were against religious teachings, religious doctrines. So they were not enemies of philosophy as such, they were indeed enemies of the philosophical propositions or positions of the people who were philosophizing at their age. And with the development of philosophy, with the flourishment of philosophy, many of those controversies have been settled. And philosophers have been able to argue better for their own positions and also to argue in a way which is harmonious to the religious teachings of Islam. So the first challenge is not that much today active. Of course, you still may find some people, some Muslims, who are not very happy with philosophy. But it's not that much the challenge, the controversy is not that much big as it used to be in the past. The second resistance against philosophy was made by the people who were very interested in the spiritual journey. Mystics, Sufis, and people who were like them. They were thinking that if we start philosophizing, if we engage in philosophy seriously and wholeheartedly, this will cause a pause in our spiritual journey, because then most of our attention will be spent on these controversies, on these arguments, on these conceptual discussions. Then we will not have that much time, that much concentration, that much focus on our own spirituality. The best way to come to certainty, the best way to get close to God, is to take care of our own spirit, our own spirituality, through a real spiritual journey, through exercises, through practices that great spiritual instructors teach us. So this was also another resistance against philosophy. But as we said before, mysticism cannot be totally free from its need to for philosophy. Philosophy helps mysticism, and mysticism also helps philosophy. And we need both. And we have had many great philosophers in Islam who at the same time were also great spiritual master, great mystics. So there is no conflict between being a philosopher and at the same time taking your spiritual life very serious. Apart from these two challenges, we have not had that much great challenge, like for example the challenges that we had in the West, such as the skeptical approach towards philosophy that on occasions appeared in the West. In Greece, after Renaissance, after Empiricists, but in Islam, we don't see that much skepticism or agnosticism among Muslim philosophers. So Muslim philosophers had very clear idea about the possibility of knowing the world around us. So this is why they didn't feel necessary to have a separate discussion about epistemology. Sometimes they discussed one issue in, for example, their discussions about existence, like for example the discussion about mental existence, al-wujud al-dhihni. Sometimes they discussed some epistemological issue when they were discussing about soul, about the nafs, and so on and so forth. They didn't feel that it's necessary to combine all these separate discussions about epistemology in one place and present a system of epistemological positions. Why? Because there was no need for that. But now, in our time, in our age, because there have been so much controversies about epistemology, there have been many differences about the possibility of knowledge, So the author suggests that we should try to put all these questions together and to develop an Islamic epistemology, and then go on studying other aspects of philosophy, the conventional or ordinary discussions of philosophy, like discussions about existence, about different sorts of existence, and so on and so forth. So this is why in this book, after the first 10 lessons that we had, now we will have a second set of 10 lessons on epistemology. The first question here is, what is the definition of epistemology? And before defining epistemology, the author says that we should know what is the meaning of episteme, what is the meaning of knowledge. There are many, many different definitions of knowledge, or al-ilm. Not because there are controversies necessarily, but because there are different sorts of knowledge and different usage of the term al-ilm, or knowledge. But here, what we mean by knowledge is a very general concept. We mean by knowledge all sorts of knowledge. Whether it be a knowledge by presence or a conceptual knowledge. Because inshallah we will see later that sometimes when I know something, it's because an image of that thing is present in my mind. For example, my knowledge about my friend is because an image of my friend exists in my mind. Of course, by image, we mean abstract image, spiritual image, not something like film. But in cases when we know something about ourselves, about our abilities, about our feelings, or even about our Creator, our knowledge may be not through images. It may be because the object of our knowledge is present with us. So my knowledge about myself may be through some concepts, maybe through image of myself that exists in my mind, or maybe direct, immediate, and that is what we call it, knowledge by presence. So when you have a knowledge about yourself, you don't need to use concepts necessarily. And when we are, for example, faced with difficulties and wholeheartedly we feel the presence of God, again, we may not need any concept to intermediate between us and our Creator. We may have direct and immediate knowledge of the object of our knowledge. So we have knowledge by presence, which is very much discussed in Islamic philosophy, but very, very rarely in Western philosophy. And many people are not familiar with this concept. And we have conceptual knowledge, which is through the existence of image of the object. And this in itself can be in two ways. Sometimes the knowledge is a particular knowledge, so you have the image of that particular in your mind, like image of your friend in your mind, and sometimes it's in a universal way. So instead of having the image of a particular or of an individual, you have a universal concept, like for example a knowledge of human being. So sometimes you know this person in a particular way, and sometimes you know him just as a human being. And just you use the concept of human being, which is very general, which is very broad. So we can have three sorts of knowledge. Knowledge by presence, knowledge by a universal concept, and knowledge by a particular image. Of course, universal concept is also in a sense an image, but the author puts this in this way, and it makes no problem. So if you want to have it perhaps in a clearer way, you could say knowledge is either through images or by presence of the object itself. And the one which is through images is either through an individual or particular image or through a universal image. So we have three sorts of knowledge. In Western epistemology, they are mostly concerned with the conceptual knowledge. They don't discuss that much about knowledge by presence. But we will study knowledge by presence as well. So this is also a definition of knowledge. So epistemology or theory of knowledge or ilm al-ma'rifah is a discipline in which problems or issues concerning knowledge in its all three forms are studied. And inshallah, in future we will see what is our position regarding different forms of knowledge, what is our position regarding the possibility of having safe and sound understanding of the objects of our knowledge. So, if I want to summarize our discussion today, I said that there are many important questions for which we need to study philosophy. But before doing any philosophical inquiry, investigation, we need first to know whether it is at all possible to know something or not. So this is why epistemology is very significant and very important. And before doing any metaphysics, we need to settle epistemological questions. And then we talked about a very, very quick review of the history of epistemology. And we said that in Greece, there were some people who raised serious doubts about perceptual knowledge. Then the Eleatics tried to defend rational knowledge. Then there were Sufis who had raised doubts about all different forms of knowledge and indeed about the truth. And then there was Aristotle who articulated logic. And then systematically Leibniz and Locke started to talk about epistemology. And then the ideas of Locke were followed by Berkeley and Hume and other positivists. And then we talked about Kant, how he was influenced by Hume. And among Muslim philosophers, we said that the issue of epistemology was not that much important. They were never faced with these doubts about the possibility of knowledge in a serious way. So this is why they didn't feel that it's necessary to have a separate discussion about epistemology. They had different, scattered discussions about epistemological issues whenever needed. And the author says, today, because we are faced with these challenges, because of the encounter that exists between us and the people who are studying Western ideas, so we need to have a separate discussion about epistemology. And in the next lessons, which will be about 10 lessons, we will have good discussion. I'm not saying very detailed because it's not enough just 10 lessons, but we will have good discussion about main questions of epistemology. And finally, we talked about the definition of knowledge, and we said we mean by knowledge here knowledge by presence and the conceptual knowledge, which is knowledge through images, and it can be either by the presence of an individual or particular image of something or by having a universal concept of something. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.